If you like to get lost for a week at a time in a big, bulky book, critic Maureen Carrigan says 1997 was your year.
This year, even more than other years, I feel obliged to preface my best books of 1997 list with the warning, these are the best books of 1997 that I've read. 1997 generated so many thick books that in trying to keep pace with them, I increasingly felt like my heroine, Lucille Ball, playing the frantic assembly line worker in that immortal candy factory episode of I Love Lucy. So, to repeat, these are the best books of 1997 that I've read. And that noted, I will tell you that I've read some darn good books this year. In fiction, this was the year of the strong, old-fashioned narrative, as exemplified by Charles Frazier's surprise bestseller, Cold Mountain. The novel's chapters alternate between the Ulysses-like struggles of a Confederate soldier to return home and the trials of the woman he left behind. This really is one of those wonderful books whose world and characters feel more real than the everyday life passing around you. Another very good, traditionally plotted novel was Jeanette Haines' Matters of Chance, which recounts 40 years in the life of an affluent Ohio family. Amidst personal trials and the tumult of the Depression and World War II, Haines' likable characters cling to rules of etiquette as drowning people cling to driftwood. The characters in Haldor Laxness's reprinted 1946 novel, Independent People, subsist on the other end of the socioeconomic spectrum. Independent People, which helped earn Laxness the Nobel Prize for Literature, chronicles the long life of an Icelandic sheep farmer and dramatizes what Marx called the idiocy of rural life. And then there were two weird works of fiction that I loved. James Hines's wicked short story collection, Publish and Perish, which combines academic satire with the trappings of the traditional horror story, and Kirsten Backus's Lives of the Monster Dogs, which is my pick for the most original and maybe even the most affecting novel of 1997. Like the best fantasy fiction, Backus's story about a race of monster dogs that appears in Manhattan stirs up restive yearnings for improbable worlds and a sobering sense of the limits of this one. As far as nonfiction goes, the first place choice is clear. J. Anthony Lucas's Big Trouble, and I'd make the same call even if Lucas were still alive. Lucas's sweeping account of the class warfare that almost tore turn-of-the-century America apart needs nobody's pity to distinguish it as a great book. A much more circumscribed but also important work of investigative journalism was Melanie Thernstrom's Halfway Heaven, which explored the murder-suicide of two Harvard undergraduates. The Gay Metropolis, Charles Kaiser's history of gay life in Manhattan from World War II to the present, is a first-rate work of social history. And the monumental first volume of R.F. Foster's projected two-volume biography, W.B. Yeats, told me almost more than I wanted to know about Yeats's obsession with the occult. Finally, Vivian Gornick's The End of the Novel of Love was one of the most provocative and readable works of popular literary criticism published in this or any other year. Let's move into the very loose category of first-person writing. John Krakauer's Into Thin Air, about the ill-starred 1996 expedition to Mount Everest, was so suspenseful that while reading it, I felt as oxygen-deprived as Krakauer must have been when he reached Everest's summit. Jean-Dominique Bobie's memoir, The Diving Bell and the Butterfly, recounts an endurance test of a different sort. Bobie, who died shortly after writing his book, was rendered almost completely paralyzed by something called locked-in syndrome. So he blinked out the words of his powerful story letter by letter using an alphabet code. I also really enjoyed Elizabeth Ehrlich's seductive memoir, Miriam's Kitchen, which weds a midlife search for meaning to a search for the best recipes for noodlekugel and honey cake. No good reading year would be complete without a little murder and mayhem. Deception on His Mind by Elizabeth George was an outstanding, gritty mystery about racial hatred in modern-day England. Small Vices by Robert B. Parker brought his detective hero Spencer back from the land of the literary undead. Lawrence Block's Even the Wicked was a superbly plotted Matthew Scudder story. And The Club Dumas by Spain's Arturo Perez Reverte was an eerie, erudite tale of antiquarian booksellers gone bad. In this last week of 1997, I'm halfway into P.D. James's newest mystery, A Certain Justice, and so far it's terrific. So the omens for 1998 look promising. In the new year, I wish you peace and plenty of time to finish all the good books waiting ahead for you.
Maureen Corrigan teaches literature at Georgetown University.